Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Saha Viryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavadi Tamastuma Vidvishavahai. Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivastadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
This so-called knowledge is actually avidya or nescience because it views the material world as a place of permanent enjoyment. Actually, the material world is dukkhalayam ashashvatam, or place of misery, where everything is temporary. To have such an understanding is a sign of knowledge, and any other opinion on the matter is nothing but ignorance, as it is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. So in these verses from Bhagavad Gita, 13th chapter, Krishna says, this is my opinion at the end. So there are so many opinions, but at the end there is only one opinion, and this is Krishna's opinion. And inside of this opinion, it is not just one thing, this opinion. There are many levels of understanding and application inside of this opinion. For example, Krishna's social system is called Varnashrama Dharma, and then inside of this system there are many possibilities. So you can say this is Krishna's opinion how the society should function, Varnashrama. But inside this there are many different levels of application, and we can choose to follow Krishna's opinion on different level. There are four Varnas and four Ashrams, and whatever suits our nature, We are free to follow that. What is more convenient, most convenient for us. But it should be inside of Krishna's opinion. So the point is that it is not just one narrow-minded thing. It's only this or black or white. So Krishna gives choice how to follow. Krishna can accommodate Krishna's social system, and Krishna's opinion accommodates all different types of conditioned mentalities that we can have. On the other hand, knowledge about the material creation, which describes the material objects as different energies of the Lord, meant to be engaged in His service, is useful for spiritual advancement. Srila Prabhupada explains in Renunciation Through Wisdom.
The jivas, being a product of spiritual energy, try to exploit the material energy. But ultimately such attempts fail, because it is impossible for one energy to always exploit and lord it over another energy. The jivas can, however, eternally serve the supreme energetic, Lord Krishna. When the jiva exploits the material energy in his endeavor to serve the Lord, that activity is transcendental, the performance of sacrifice. Any other kind of activity amounts to nothing but materialistic, bhutic work.
So the point here, Prabhupada makes, actually destroys the idea that we are the controllers and the enjoyers. The point that is made in Bhagavad Gita, Ishvara Aham Aham Bhogi. So this is destroyed here. It's refuted. Why? Because, as Prabhupada explains, it is not possible for one energy to always control another energy, because energy, the nature of energy is that it changes. It's not stable. It needs variety. And for some time it is possible, but not it is not constant. Like Krishna also says in Bhagavad Gita, Yayatam Daryate Jagat. The living entities, Krishna says, they are my superior nature, superior energy, and they try to exploit the inferior energy, Jagat. But it doesn't work all the way through. At one point things change. Like for example, you make all the arrangements, everything's perfect, and then it starts raining. So who is in control now? The jiva or the material energy? Yes. So the jiva cannot exploit all the time the material energy. It goes back. So here the point is that the Krishna and by his instructions, the jiva should, his consciousness should move from fruity work toward Krishna consciousness, or working without fruitive desire. So now we are ending this section. And, I would like some of you to make a, how to say, summary of what we have studied till now. Yes, I have questions. Okay.
In the book, I read that.
What is this? Which page?
104.
Yes.
And the last paragraph. So those living beings who reside in five planets, like the sun and the moon, as well as those in North America, this earth planet and also those who live on the other planet, all are merged into the waters of manifestation during the night time. So the next sentence, during this time, no living beings are supposed to remain manifest. Also, spiritually, they continue to exist. So what does it mean? And why does it necessary this kind of avyakta?
Yeah. So the question?
So what means the sentence?
And that means...
Why necessary this kind of avyakta?
Why it is necessary?
Yeah.
It is necessary because at the end of the day, at the end of the life of Brahma, there has to be destruction in the universe.
But it's not so long term.
What is not so
long term? It's not so long term. So it's so long term that the living beings are not manifested.
Why it's so long?
Yeah.
Why the night is so long? It's like, it's 12 hours. In 12 hours is day.
So it's necessary because
it is necessary in the sense that in this way the living entities are reminded again and again that this is not the proper place for them to be in the material world, because they have to face here again and again birth and death and destruction. Even if everything goes right, then at the end there will be the day of Brahma will come to an end, and then even the lifetime of Brahma will end up at one point. So there will be again destruction, again and again. And Prabhupada made this point a little earlier, that all these troubles, they serve as indirect reminders of the between the soul and the material energy. In this sense, it's needed. Otherwise, the jiva can think that this is very nice. It's my place. And why it is so long? It is not so long. I mean, for us, a day or a night, it's not so long. So from the point of view of Brahma, it's not long. For example, one of his days. He has the same feelings.
Continue to exist spiritually, this
Yeah. That means they are stocked in the body of Mahavishnu for this time, like compressed in his body. And when the new universe is being created, they are, what's the word? Breathe out?
Excel.
Yeah, excel. So they stay there for a while.
So they can continue the service to the Lord in this position?
They could. Usually what is said in Prabhupada's purport is not that they continue the service, but that the Paramatma reminds them about their fruitive desires they had from the previous creation, and they just go on chasing these material goals. That's why they remain in the material world. Or they could pick up their devotional service also if they made some advancement. Yes. The devotional service, the credit that is gained by devotional service is never lost. So it stays in the soul. It doesn't matter. Is this answering the question? Okay. So what do we discuss? What we discussed until now. There are how many sections we went through?
Four.
Sorry?
Four sections.
Who are they? Who are those?
The four sections first is describing the Lord and His energies and how we should and should not understand them and act in accordance with those.
Yes, which is the Ishvasa principle.
Yeah.
So this is
that's the first three mantras.
Yeah.
Invocation.
Okay. So from invocation till mantra three, basically. This is the main idea of the book is presented there. And then from mantra four till mantra eight. Then well, another thing in the first section, it is mentioned that if you follow this principle of Ishvasya, then you attain spiritual result. If you don't follow it, you attain material result. And then the next section from 4 to 8 describes again the spiritual result in more details that someone who understands and follows the Ishvasya will obtain. In connection with the inconceivable characteristics of the Lord, especially. In a sense that only those who follow this Ishvasya concept they can develop their consciousness to the level of Mahabhagavata devotee, and only Mahabhagavata can see the Lord as He is, with all these confusing, apparently contradicting qualities. And then, the section that we just went through.
It's describing if you don't do that.
Yes.
Then what happens to you?
Yes. Different grades of impiety, we can say. Different grades of non-devotees. They reject the Ishvasya concept. And now, the last section, verses 15 till 18. These are the prayers of the devotee. Because we have already established that a devotee is higher than the non-devotee. Non-devotees are described in the previous section, we just discussed. So the devotee is higher than the non-devotee, and his activities are higher also. And someone may ask, so for such a person, what are his prayers? Just like in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna establishes who is Stita Pragya. Maharaj just described this in the second chapter. And then Arjuna asks a question. How does Stita Pragya sits? How does he walks? Like this. So now we want to know what is the devotional mood of this person, and what are his prayers. And another thing very important, this section establishes something that we mentioned already before, is that we are different from the Karma Mimamsa philosophers. We have followers of the Vedanta philosophy. in a sense, that means, even if you understand the Ishvabasi concept and follow it, apply it in the life, still, in order to get the result, you need the mercy of Krishna. It doesn't follow automatically that you attain anything, because Krishna is a person. And this is the difference between us and the karma mimamsakas, or they also called purva mimamsa. This is the karma mimamsa, and uttara mimamsa. This is the Vedanta. Purva means preliminary, uttara means final. Mimamsa means study, philosophy. In a sense that this is the preliminary study of the Vedas, karma mimamsa. And the final, ultimate study is Vedanta. Okay, so, would you like to read the mantra? 15.
Oh my Lord, sustainer of all that lives, your real face is covered by your dazzling effulgence. Kindly remove that covering and exhibit yourself to your pure devotee.
Thank you. So from the study guide, from mantras 12 to 14, we understood that the material energy should be studied only in connection with the Lord. That means even if you want to attain some result in the material world, then you need some knowledge to do this. You need to acquire some skill. Even in this case, when you acquire this knowledge and skill, we should understand that this knowledge is connected to Krishna, because still it works according to Krishna's law, how the material energy works. So in this way already, this knowledge is becomes aparavidya, if you see it in connection to the world. And then, as far as application of the knowledge goes, then this stage also should be connected to Krishna, because when you apply the knowledge with focus and determination, you get the result. Then this result should be for Krishna's pleasure. And this is what is called renunciation, or even higher level is, what is the higher level? Renunciation. We spoke about this so many times. And that means?
That means that you don't work for yourself, you give it to the Lord, you work for the Lord.
Yeah, from the very, you don't formally offer the result to the Lord, because it is already offered from the very beginning.
Mm.
This is the verse from Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna describes the difference between renunciation and sannyas. So in both these stages, this knowledge should be connected to Krishna. Mantra 15 explains that one should understand Bhagavan Sri Krishna as the master of both the material and spiritual energies. Mantra 16 continues the prayer of the devotee for the Lord to reveal his spiritual form. In Mantra 14 it is stated, one should know perfectly the personality of Godhead Shri Krishna and his transcendental name, form, qualities and pastimes, as well as the temporary material creation with its temporary demigods, men and animals. Such transcendental realizations are possible only by Krishna's mercy. Therefore, the concluding mantras of Sri Ishupanishad teach the process of gaining the Lord's mercy by devotional prayers. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan writes in his commentary on Mantra 15,
after the Guru delineates the form of Paramatma to the qualified disciple, the disciple engages in the selfless worship of the Lord to meet the Lord directly, and then attains a liberated stage. This has been described in the previous verses, but meeting the Lord directly is not possible just by Shravana, Manana, Nityasana, etc. And liberation is not possible just by meeting the Lord. Only when one attains the mercy of the Lord can one attain the Lord. The concluding verses of the Upanishad show the method of praying for the Lord's mercy, so that one may attain perception of the Lord through hearing and meditation, and so that one may attain liberation from the world through perceiving.
So the same point is made. So if we read the purport to this mantra, we see Prabhupada making the point the highest knowledge is to understand Bhagavan Sri Krishna as the source of Paramatma and Brahman. This is the last two paragraphs of the purport. I'd like to read. Page 115, you follow? The conclusion is that one who has no knowledge of the potencies of the Supreme Truth will realize the impersonal Brahman. Similarly, when one realizes the material potencies of the Lord but has little or no information of the spiritual potency, he attains Paramatma realization. Thus, both Brahman and Paramatma realization of the Absolute Truth are partial realizations. However, when one realizes the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, in full potency, after the removal of the Hiranmaya Patra, one realizes Vasudeva Sarvamiti. Lord Sri Krishna, who is known as Vasudeva, is everything. Brahman, Paramatma and Bhagavan. He is Bhagavan, the root, and Brahman and Paramatma are his branches. In the Bhagavad Gita, there is a comparative analysis, so the knowledge about Bhagavan is the highest, and then this is this paragraph, and then the last paragraph explains that the devotee who is mastering this knowledge is the highest among all transcendentalists. So in Bhagavad Gita there is a comparative analysis of the three types of transcendentalists: the worshippers of the impersonal Brahman, Gyanis; the worshippers of Paramatma feature, Yogis; and the devotees of Lord Sri Krishna, Bhaktas. It is stated there that the Gyanis who have cultivated Vedic knowledge are better than ordinary fruitive workers, that the Yogis are still greater than the Gyanis, and that among all Yogis, those who constantly serve the Lord with all their energies are the topmost. In summary, a philosopher is better than a laboring man. A mystic is superior to a philosopher, and of all the mystic yogis, he who follows Bhakti Yoga, constantly engaging in the service of the Lord, is the highest. Sri Ishupanishad directs us towards this perfection. In another place in Bhagavad Gita is explained the same thing. There is this famous verse from, I think, 8th chapter. Vadeshu Yageshu, was it 8th chapter? Vadeshu Yageshu Tapashu Chaiva Daneshu Yat Punyam Palam Pradishtam Atyatita Tsarva Midam Viditva Yogi Param Stanam Upaiti Chadyam. The yogi, the Bhakti Yogi, attains all the results of all these processes. The Vedeshu Yageshu Tapasu, studies of the Vedas, performing Yagyas and Tapasya, giving in charity. He attains all of this, and just by the process of devotional service. And not only this, but at the end he attains something even higher than that, which is Paramsthanam, the supreme abode. So the knowledge of Bhagavan is the highest knowledge, and the devotee who is following, practicing this knowledge is the highest transcendentalist. Yes?
What is the goal of the yogi?
The mystic yogi?
Yes.
It is to... First of all, they follow all these rules and regulations, yama and niyama. And in order to mitigate the disturbances that they come from the outside world. Because naturally, if you follow a pious lifestyle, then there'll be less people that hate you and make you trouble. So when this is accomplished, then they move to the next stage. They do this asanas. That means the body has to be healthy, in a sense, so that it doesn't create disturbance. So first you deal with the Adi Bhautika klesha. Mm-hmm. Then Adhyatmika klesha. The disturbance from the body. And then from the gross body, then when this is mastered, the asanas, then the pranayama comes, then the disturbance from the mind also ceases, because when even when one breathes, then still the mind is disturbed. So they have to stop also this, or make it very subtle, so it doesn't disturb the mind. So the goal is to stop all these disturbances, so that the mind can be focused on one point, and this should be the super soul in the heart, ideally. Although many of them get deviated long before that, because they get all these mystic perfections. But it doesn't necessarily means that when they realize the Paramatma, they will start serving the Lord.
Yes, so then once they realize Paramatma, what do they do?
They have two options. Either they will continue, go on with this idea of merging with Him. Many of them, they have this idea.
The same concept like the Gyanis?
Even worse than the Gyanis. Because the Gyanis, normally they don't know that Krishna is a person. So they just try to merge with the Brahman. But the yogis, they know, because they have seen. They see Paramatma, and still they want to merge with. So it's even lower. And some of them, they will develop attraction to Paramatma in Shantarasa. Or possibly, maybe, some will even develop higher taste than just appreciating the Lord, His beauty. But will develop a desire to interact with Him. So, this is also possible. Okay. It depends. Okay. Where were we? What was talking before?
That they are achieving something higher from their body and their
spiritual vision. Ah, yeah. Which is the Lord's abode. In mantras 15 and 16, the Lord is addressed as Pushan or Sustainer. The Lord pervades and supports the material creation with a single fragment of Himself. He maintains everybody, but still He shows special mercy to His devotees. So from all these three stages, the maintenance is the most difficult. And the most difficult part of maintenance is not the maintenance of the body, because Krishna was doing this anyway, even before that, before we became devotees. But the most difficult part is to maintain the mood of the devotee, the devotional mood or faith. So this is a very difficult task, and Krishna is doing this on His own. It's very delicate. He guides them and gives them the necessary knowledge to attain Him. Therefore, the devotees are in superior position compared to the gyanis and the yogis who depend on their limited strength. My dear Uddhava, the unalloyed... This is a quote from Bhagavatam, 11th canto. My dear Uddhava, the unalloyed devotional service rendered to me by my devotees brings me under their control. I cannot be discontrolled by those engaged in mystic yoga, Sankhya philosophy, pious work, Vedic study, austerity, or renunciation. The words Asau Purusha Soham Asmi from Mantra 16 do not imply that the living entity and the Supreme Lord are identical in all respects. Because these are the Soham Asmi, these are the Mahavakyas. Shankara Acharya, declared, thank you, that these are the most important messages of the Vedas. Four of them. So the acharyas, they just want to make sure that we don't misunderstand them in an impersonal way, because they have perfect Vaishnava explanation, all of them. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur translates mantra 16 to read as follows: O Pushan, Ekarshi, Surya, Prajapatya, remove your rays, restrict your light, then I can see your most auspicious form. I am qualified to see that form because you, the complete person, and Paramatma, your portion in the material world, and we jivas also are all spiritual by nature. If you are merciful, I can see you. So Soham Asmi doesn't mean I'm God. It means we are spiritual by nature, both of us. This is confirmed by Vedanta Deshika, who writes in his commentary. Some claim that the sentences Tattvam Asi and Soham Asmi teach the concept of only one Brahman with no qualities. By destroying the false illusory forms of cause Ishvara and effect Jiva. So, there is no... they say that, the Mayavadi say that there is no actually cause and effect. There is no difference. There is no connection between Brahman and the world, because the world doesn't exist. Very easy. Get rid of the whole problem. It's not a problem. However, like a knife, the word Asmi destroys this concept because it indicates the state of my existing even after the realization. Since the concept of you and I are supposed to be rejected by the hearer, Tvam, and the seeker of Brahman, Aham, in these two sentences, according to the proponents of this philosophy, there can be no one who is enlightened by the state of Tvam Asi, your existing, and there can be no one seeking Brahman by the state of Aham Asmi, my existing. Thus, the statement will be useless. Did you follow the logic? It's simple. If there is no teacher and a student, then because they are one, then the statement is useless in a sense that the Mayavadis take it. Okay. So, we'll end up here. And I have the essay questions for you, so please write them down. There will be only two. Finally, you get the essay. Everybody was asking about this. You must write very nice essays now. You're so anxious. So the first question, which will be compulsory for everybody to read, there is no choosing here. You have to write this essay. Explain the concept of Ishvasya. Explain the concept of Ishvasya. Now, the second essay question, you have to choose, you have four proposals to choose from. First, explain the meaning of Saguna and Nirguna applied for Krishna and the Jiva. This is the first. Explain the meaning of Saguna and Nirguna applied to Krishna and to the Jiva. Next, describe the vision of the Mahabhagavata devotee. Describe the vision of the Mahabhagavata devotee. Next, why mistaken knowledge is more harmful than ignorance? The next one.
Can you repeat the second question?
Describe the vision of this one. Describe the vision of the Mahabhagavata devotee. This one you mean? Then why mistaken knowledge is more harmful than ignorance? Why wrong knowledge is more dangerous than ignorance? And the last one, describe the ultimate goal of life. According to Sri Upanishad, yeah, from these four, you choose one. And the first one is a must, the Ishvasya.
How long should they be?
Half a page. The last one. What is the ultimate goal of life according to Sri Upanishad? I mean, like the Bhagavad Gita says, the same. No difference. half a page, 200 words. Or you can write even less if you can explain, answer the question in less words. Or a little more than that, so I suppose. So tomorrow we'll be finishing with these studies. And then you have a week break to write your essays. Especially this
tomorrow the we'll third get more essay questions.
No, that's it.
Well, this is for the whole.
That's it. Then a week break
to write these essay questions.
Yes, and write the Bhagavad Gita or whatever. And then we'll start from the next week.
With
nectar construction.
Just for nectar construction.
No, just for this period, probably. Not Bhagavad Gita and nectar version. You. Yeah, and don't spread it around. I might have a problem. Yes. The Bhagavad Gita, you didn't get it. I sent it yesterday.
Okay.
Did you check your email yesterday? No, check it. I think you should. Okay. All right. Everything is clear about the questions. Everybody wrote them. No questions. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.